Hi, I'm Derek.
And hi, I'm Darren, and you're listening to Revolt Lab,
a podcast about changing what we do in education. Again, thank you everyone for joining us today. This is our inaugural podcast for Revolt Lab. Darren and I are happy that you're here to talk about some of the great things the notions we put in the book. And we're happy to have with us our guest from way across the sea, our friend Kim, who's actually mentioned in the book. But I'm gonna let Darren take over from there.
Oh yes, this is an intro I'm gonna love doing. Kim and I met probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And it's all about being connected in our work, and got connected with Kim through one of his fellow Norwegian educators, Taya Pedersen. And then the story just kind of took place from there. Got to know he and his family really well. We still flip grid every once in a while between our families, and the kids are getting to know each other. Flew Kim across to the States last year, right around this time, and just had a blast out in the Black Hills. Right. Derek and I did a keynote out in Rapid City, and Taya and Kim were here and just had a great time. You got to see all different kinds of weather in South Dakota, from beautiful 70, 75 degrees in the Badlands to blizzards, trying to get them up to Minneapolis to the airport. But everyone, you're going to love hearing Kim talk about not just what it's like to be an educator, but an educator in Norway, and an educator that really has a strong kind of intuitive digital sense about him and some of the things that he loves to do. I know I'm motivated by him. I personally, we snap video all the time and just love talking to each other, but he's doing some really, really cool things in Norway, which really kind of fits the revolution kind of theme for our podcast. So Kim, if you just want to, if there's something that I forgot to mention, but just kind of talk about yourself a little bit and just what you're doing right now in Norway.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yes, I had a blast meeting you and Derek in South Dakota a year ago. That was a memory I will treasure. So I've just turned 40. You didn't mention that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. I have 4 kids here in Norway, married to my wife, Karianne. She's also a teacher, so she's a pusher in our household, making me move forward each day. Being a teacher for 12, 13 years now, not standing still is probably what I'm trying to accomplish with my teaching, I would say.
So I like that piece about not standing still, Kim, because that means a lot to a lot of people. You know, when we think about teaching and education, people come in and they're ready to go cookie cutter. And you know, do the same thing, replicate the same thing over and over. What has that meant for you, not standing still?
The doing the same thing over and over, I think that's keeping the traditions alive. I think if you, as a teacher, teach the way that you were taught when you were in school, I think you're standing, or you're not standing still. I think you're kind of stuck, and probably I think also that's where the educational system in some ways in Norway and probably in the States as well is kind of stuck. So for me, getting unstuck and moving forward, trying to keep the tradition a tradition, I think that's a good way of seeing it. Moving forward each day is very important for me. So I'm trying to teach the way I would like to be taught if I were a student myself.
So I'm guessing there, my question probably is going to have a correlation with teachers in the States, but, you know, as you're talking about being unstuck, I mean, what's it like for you? I mean, do you have obstacles? Do people, some educators look at you and say, nah, you know what? And there's no way. And if that's the case, how do you break through it?
Yeah, I think all the time. I think me and Taya, we do we have some keynotes together sometimes, and we always talk about it after. Are we talking above people's heads, or are they getting the message? And I think a lot of people want to move forward or want to get rid of the textbook and try different methods of teaching, but I think there are some obstacles. I think the idea of every teacher needs to be in control of the class, I think that's one of the main obstacles that you will encounter. I also think that time is an issue. You don't have time. You think that, oh, if I do this, then I will sacrifice everything else, and then I will also lose control. So I think for most parts, I think it's about taking not controlled risk, but I think it's about taking risks in the way that you grow. I think that's a way of moving forward. The obstacles, they often get created by yourself, I think. But of course, you have the, in Norway, there's a word that's called janteloven. I'm not sure. I think that's kind of unique to Norway, where you're not supposed to stand out. You're not supposed to do anything different. So that's pretty big in Norway. I think if you do something different, I think people will quickly say, oh, this guy is nuts, or he can't be doing that. This is crazy. Let's go back to the textbook and keep it safe. So I think Talia is also a teacher that experiences that a lot. So there are obstacles, but also I think they are within yourself.
Okay, so there's like a lot to unpack with what you just said. So I think Derek's thinking the same thing. There's a couple things to kind of circle back on. For me, I hear you use the word control. And first off, yes, there are similarities with teachers in the States too, I think. But control, here's my theory on control. My theory is the more control you have, the less control you really do have with kids. And that's trying to help people understand that they gotta let go, and they gotta empower the kids to help with some of those decisions. Derek, I'm sure you got a couple points here you wanted to come back on.
Our audience can't see me, obviously, but I'm in the back nodding my head like the whole time you're talking, and I even had to take out something to write with because you were hitting on so many awesome points. But just to piggyback on the immediate one about control, as principals, one thing that I like to tell teachers is you will only, the image of control that you have in your classroom is just that, it's an image. You are only two or three decisions away from that students can make for you to be out of control. You know, so students come and they decide to be civil in your classroom or to let you talk when that is a decision that they make. So instead of focusing on that fist-like control, empowering students is such, it does them more in terms of preparing them for the future, and it does us more because it allows them to see us trust them. So Kim, on the image, on the talk of control right now, tell us about your journey from just that piece in terms of empowering students, in terms of starting off as a teacher who did not empower students, and then what it looks like, what you feel like, and what you are now as a person as you empower learners.
So the piece on control is, of course, a huge topic. But it's, for me, it's like this. It's when you walk into a classroom, you see kids sitting in a row, or they are told to raise their hand before they can speak. And you try to give the lesson in front of the students, not being right there with them when they are actually learning something. I think that is the kind of control that you as a teacher, most certainly you do this the first couple of years when you're teaching. But for me as a person, I think I've changed in the way that I move towards where the students are in their learning process. I don't think I need to be standing in front of them. I don't think I'm a, I've heard you guys say this, the sage on the stage, I think it's called.
Yeah.
So that's something that we always try to move away from. And I think you also, when you do make that change, you can also see the power in moving with the students. So you can't be a teacher that has all the answers anymore. You have to change with the way that the society is changing. And then when you do that change, I think also you grow as a teacher, you become more confident in what you're doing. And I think also I believe that that is the way you have to be teaching kids today.
So Darren, if I may, I'd like to, so another point that I picked, first of all, thank you, Kim. Awesome. Just incredible. Awesome. But, you know, you mentioned something earlier about textbooks. And I want to bring this back and make sure that our audience fully understands where we are right now. So Darren is in South Dakota. When we started writing the book, I was in North Carolina, and now I'm in Georgia. And, you know, so Darren and I are kind of worlds apart in terms of geography and demographics and where we wrote the book, but we were heading in the same direction in terms of really wanting to turn middle school on its ear. But just so our audience is clear, Kim is joining us from Norway. And some of the things that he's talking about in his observances are truly... they're the same limitations that we have here in the United States, even given our history. And so the piece that is really resonated with me is his talk about textbooks. The same reliance and the same adherence and necessity that a lot of adults have for textbook teaching and textbook learning, we see that's happening now in Norway. That blew my mind. And I don't know why, but just that connection really is really blowing my mind, and that we're all having the same problem. And in 2020, we should be so far beyond that. How do you see that changing in Norway, where you are? And I don't want to put this all on Norway. You don't have to give the whole Norwegian perspective, but how do you see that changing in your school system, in your school, and just give us some insight on that.
Well, the Norwegian school or the educational system is it's getting increasingly more tech heavy. So I think you have more opportunities to create more or a bigger variety in your teaching or in your lessons. When we say that the change where the teachers move away from the textbook, this is not in general all of Norway, this is not happening.
Right.
It's happening in some regions of Norway. It's becoming more of a norm, I think. And especially maybe in our region and somewhere around the capital. I feel that this is something that's starting to happen. What's the reason behind it? I'm not sure. I think awareness of that, or people have figured out that Google exists, and and personal learning experience, or the PLNs are growing, and people are figuring out that this is a global phenomenon. It's not just something that's happening in our small corner of the world. So I think people want to do this, or they want it for the students. They want the students to be have more authentic learning when they come to school. And they also see that, well, we have some, if you have behavioral issues in your school, probably most of them, well, this is only my thoughts, but most of them are probably caused by kids being bored. They don't come to school and experience the school that they want to be in, or that they dreamed of being in. And I think you will get some behavioral issues with that. I think we would have protested if our work was boring, wouldn't we?
And that's a great word to put to it, is protest. You know, kids are bored. They go home, when kids go home in the evenings, and they are connected to a hyper-informative world, we're asking them to, for the most part, We're telling them to come to school and shut down, you know, shut down on all you're capable of doing and all that you're doing at home, and let us funnel you this information as we stand in front of a board and spoon feed it to you. Yeah, that's so. Protest is a great word. I love that. Thank you for that.
The book is called The Revolution. So.
Thanks for the shameless plug, Kim. You know, just for me, having been there, I know there's a lot of great things going on in Norway, a lot of great teachers. So just, I don't want to paint a picture that Norway's not doing something right, because there's some pockets that are really doing some powerful things. I mean, you and Taya School in general, I think, Sven and Oda, and you got Joe Klumper is over there now. But give us a sense right now, what does education look like in Norway? Because I'm guessing you're going through some of the same things we are here in the States.
Yeah, so that's actually quite interesting, because we are getting some new national standards in August this year, which is not a review of our old standards, but it's... Yeah, so the educational system in Norway is, as I said, going through a lot of changes. It will be, I think, when we are done with all the preparation, I think the classroom will look more student or learner centered. I think the teachers will have to be aware that the students are unique and they are learning in their own way or at their own pace. Not that we haven't had that before, but it will be even more important after August 2020. So that's a common or a general state of the educational system in Norway right now.
I think okay. It
paints a great, good enough picture.
So as of today, it's Sunday, March the 22nd, and we're all dealing with this global pandemic, the coronavirus. It has really turned every aspect of our society on its ear. We're shutting down schools statewide here. We're out for a month, and teachers here on this side, Kim, are, whether they're ready for it or not, whether they're familiar with it or not, some are engaging in remote learning, some are engaging in just digital learning, teaching from home, some are engaging in, and I say remote learning because it may not be, there may or may not be technology involved. So if you don't mind, please share with us, What does it look like in Norway? How much of an adjustment have you and your school had to make for this? And then what do you think in terms of education? How is this going to look for you all in the coming weeks?
Yeah, so this has been, well, we are 1 week in right now. where our schools, all schools and daycare centers, everything has been closed. There's been, well, Thursday was the last day we had students at our school. And then Friday, everything was just closed down. So we had very little time preparing for this. I think it was a bit of a shock actually to make the change from staying at home, trying to remotely educate our students or our class. But I think the two first days, Monday and Tuesday, they were, I kind of want to paint a picture. It was the first day of teaching, first year.
Yeah.
You think that this is, how can I do this? This is too hectic. That was the feeling put into those 2 days. It was nuts.
Yeah.
And when you had sat down and you tried to find a rhythm, you kind of realized that, okay, we are a tech. We have technology in our school. We are a bit fortunate. Every student has a Chromebook. So for us, the change wasn't that big. But of course, you see your colleagues that are not too technology advanced or struggling with making this happen for their class. And then you try to help them as well. And then it kind of builds to this. You work a lot more trying to remotely educate your students than you did in school, that's for sure. So you always know, you also notice that teachers will give a lot more feedback on work now than what we did when we were in class. And what's kind of funny is that students, when they are at home studying, you can see the same patterns as when they are in class. The students that work hard, they work hard from home. The students that take shortcuts maybe struggling a bit, they also struggle. So it's no difference there, in my opinion, or in my class, it's like that anyway. So I mean, it will be, I'm guessing you're going into this right now, trying to make plans for this, and that's a bit tricky. I mean, you're in for a challenge, I think, and you will make mistakes. We did a lot of mistakes in the beginning, and I think we still do. It's been 1 week, so we're no experts on the remote learning, but I mean, it's challenging, but also I think in the end, I think the outcome of it will be teachers being more confident with the use of technology.
I think
it will be a big push towards getting teachers into realizing that technology could be the way to go.
That's exactly the point I've been thinking recently. I'm real kind of curious what it's going to look like in 5 years with ed tech and just teachers and just how they view it, because now they've had to understand or realize they have to use it. And this is going to be my best medium to be able to talk with kids. Kim, you know, when you and I talked a couple days ago on Snap Video, you said something I thought was really interesting, because I'm really passionate about culture. And you said one of the first things you had to do in what we're dealing with right now with digital, remote learning, whatever you want to call it, is you had to create an e-culture, an e-learning culture. Can you explain that?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. We had to do the first day was to set the culture of what we expect from our students. So you can't just go into communicating online with students and think that, okay, this is going to work if I just go in there without a plan or without some expectations for my students. So I think the main thing for teachers in the beginning is to be aware what kind of expectation do you want from your student? What do you want them? How do you want them to behave? It's actually kind of like in the classroom, first day of school. You go in, you set your expectations, you tell them, you explain to the students, how is this going to look? How am I going to present this for you? And then when you've done this, you will actually buy a lot of time, and you will also, the students will respect it right away. Because, I mean, I was a bit worried that, okay, I can say this, but they are at home. I'm in my living room trying to do this. But students, they really responded to it. If you are clear and you tell them, okay, this is what we are going to do today. This is how we're going to do it. And this is what I want from you in the end. They will come through. And I think also the kids staying at home, they really need the structure. So set the day. We have class meetings that start at 9 o'clock every day so that they get to talk to the teacher. They get to see you. And they also get to know what the day entails or what the day is going to bring in form of their education. And this is important for the kids. So building a strong culture in the beginning is a key for success in online learning, I think.
That's awesome. In the book, we talk about the importance of setting high expectations for students, you know. So, you know, just because we have this unprecedented event going on around us doesn't mean that we can't have high levels of participation and develop high level empowering work for our learners to complete for us. I love what you said earlier that feedback has really picked up. And at a time like this, it needs to. Feedback, we should always be providing high quality feedback regularly to our learners. But we shouldn't let distance be something that keeps feedback from happening, like providing feedback from happening to our learners.
No, and I think you will realize that the relationship between you and the student is only change the place where it takes place. I mean, you're at home and they're at home, so you're distant. But if you have a good relationship with your students from your classroom, that will also be the case in online space.
Yes.
So awesome. That way you can set the high expectations as well.
Yes. Profound. I love that.
So Kim, let's pretend you're in the classroom, let's say next week you're going to be back in there. So pretend it's status quo. For you, what does revolution look like in your school or in your work right now?
Revolution for me in school looks like more people are taking chances. It looks like people are moving towards the student or the learner-based part of education. They are walking with the students, not in front of them. I think that will be the revolution that I would like to see in my school. And I think my school is moving that way in a sense. I think there's a small revolution happening at my school. I like to think so. And I think you can tell when you walk into a school building if there's a bit of a revolution going on there.
Yep, absolutely agree with that one. You can sense just how people respond to you. I think it's kind of a vibe that's brought out not just from the adults but from the kids too.
Yeah, definitely. Even more true from the kids, I think.
Risk taking is when you want people to take risks, when you are facilitating people to take risks, that really says a lot about the leadership in the building, where they're centered and where they're grounded as a person. And then it really says a lot about the adults, the teachers in the building, that they feel comfortable doing it. And when learners see the adults on a good page, then they're gonna, when they take risks, we see fantastic things. And And you know, that's a key message in the revolution. That's a great one.
All right. Well, I suppose we're similar to some podcasts, but we have one question that we're always going to ask people in the end. So, Kim, here's your question. What are your keys to spreading your revolution?
A tough question. I would say it would have to be an open mind. Open your eyes. And I would also say, be kind.
Ooh.
Nice.
Be kind. If you can't be anything else, be kind. I love that.
Be kind.
That is fantastic. Kim, thank you so much, man. And it's awesome to see you and connect with you again.
Yeah, same to you, Derek. Great to see you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Well, take care, Kim. Hopefully I'll be seeing you in a couple months. So.
Yes, fingers crossed.
You bet.
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast today. We are committed to changing what we do for the betterment of our learners.
I also want to encourage you to check out our book, The Revolution. It's time to empower change in our schools. Make sure you check it out on Amazon. And also check out future or present podcasts that we have within this Revolt Lab. And please feel free to leave some comments or even rate it on iTunes or Android.